Welcome to Hot Yoga Radio. This is sunny, cloudless, frosty, pristine day in January 2017. The great holistic detective, Dirk Gently, is known to frequently say, everything is connected. Now, Dirk Gently is a fictional character, but sometimes they do get the best lines. And Dirk Gently is a detective, but he's actually a holistic detective. And as he puts it, he said he doesn't bother with things like forensics when he's on a case. Such things as fingerprints, DNA, samples of fibres and so forth. Instead, he solves cases by just doing whatever. I quite like that, actually. Because even though the Dirk Gently stories are full of wonderful impossibilities, like time travel and soul swaps and infinite energy machines and so forth, he is actually onto something. And if you're a weirdo like me, you find clues all over the place. And Dirk Gently is he's exemplary in this respect. And things happen into consciousness, events, and appear to be significant. There may be internal events like dreams and so forth. There may be something that you just notice. Maybe something that somebody says to you, and they seem to reveal a kind of an underlying pattern of connections, not necessarily causal connections, as we've talked about in a podcast on synchronicity. But if we wanted to explore this a bit further, and perhaps in a more sober fashion than is allowed for by fiction and science fiction and science fantasy and so forth, we have to consider what a thing is. Because Dirk Gently is telling us, along with the Buddha actually, you know, that things, objects are connected to each other. And I suppose in both cases here, what is it being attempted is a way of using language in a less object-based fashion, and actually then allowing our understanding to be guided by that new vocabulary and that new use of language. And in both cases, in Dirk Gently's case, and in the Buddha's case, this is to do with taking that flux, the incessant movement that is the most obvious thing about our human experience, as the basis of where we should start. Now, we've talked about this before, you know, between like metaphysics of stasis and kind of crypto metaphysics of flux. Now, I say crypto metaphysics there because actually just flux is just what we find. We can posit stasis as being some kind of ultimate reality, as did Parmenides, and as we find in some Indian metaphysics. But actually, once you get down the road of a metaphysics of stasis, you have to start saying that we are in a state of delusion. And I kind of actually, I'm a bit chary about doing that, because what it does, it teaches us to distrust our experience. Even though, of course, we know that we are prone to illusions and delusions. But at the same time, I think you can be over impressed with that, we can very often find ways around our illusions. I mean, for instance, the illusion that railway lines get closer and closer together as they move away from us. You could actually walk along the track and take measurements and find that, well, actually, this is an optical illusion. And, you know, we do have ways, inductive, particularly ways of clearing up conundrums around our propensity for illusion. Now, obviously, you know, we are in a human condition. Perception depends on our organism. So, in a sense, it's always, as Nietzsche said, perspectival. It is the perspective from a particular locus. Not only a physical locus of where the eye stands in relation to that which is seen, but a conceptual location and a cultural location and an organic animal location. It's just to do with all the full range of our humanity. You know, perception is an engagement, and perception is creative, and as Bergson said, there's no perception without memory. So it is actually not a simple act when we perceive. It's not simple, though we kind of like to think that it is. And maybe that needs to be put on one side. And yes, we do need to take full cognizance of our propensity for delusion and delusion. But nevertheless, starting with this immediate apprehension of the fact that everything changes, we ourselves change, our bodies change, they grow old, they get sick, they die. Maybe you have some bits of it cut off, or some bits added to it, etc. And of course, the world around us, you know, I just commented on the winteriness of it all, you know. But in 6 months' time, we'll be walking hereabouts. Thank you. I'll be walking hereabouts, and it'll be warm and sunny. And it's icy and cold, even though it's sunny also. You know, seasons. And we can look out at the galaxies, extending our senses with instruments, and see galaxies explode and get swallowed by black holes, and so forth. Our language, and I believe not all languages, but certainly very many languages, and certainly the Indo-European languages that are fairly dominant on the planet at the moment, take as their basis the noun, and the noun being the name of an object, a thing. So back to Dirk Gently's everything is connected. Well, are there even any things to be connected? Yeah. Aren't things themselves bundles of connection, which bundle up with other bundles of connection through other connections? And if we're really going to kind of take on board the flux idea and attempt to find a language for it, and to say everything is connected, we need a way of putting thing in scare quotes somehow. At the same time, you know, we need to realise that that language is fantastic and it's useful. This is not to denigrate languages as some kind of great flaw in existence. It's not. But as Wittgenstein remarked, our intelligence does get bewitched by language, but language, of course, is also the tool that we have at our disposal to attempt to deepen our understanding as well. And we're in this funny position of having to, we've got to use language for thousands of years. You know, Plato tried to get to the bottom of beds and chairs and tables, and now in fact we can name them and know what we're talking about, even though you can have a three-legged table, four-legged table, six-legged table, a metal table, a wooden table, a PVC table, a big table, small table, a low table, a high table. And yet somehow we can use the word table and know what we mean, and it functions very well for us. And of course this leads to the theory of forms, which I think is in many ways it's the first linguistic turn. Plato is trying to explain a linguistic phenomenon. And of course by Aristotle was very concerned with things, you know, with essence and attribute and quality and so forth. And actually when Aristotle is talking about things in the metaphysics, he says he gets very uptight about Heraclitus's doctrine of eternal flux panterae. The idea everything changes, same idea as the Buddha's, nothing is stable. Aristotle thought, well, that means there are no things, therefore we can't talk, therefore we can't do logic, and this greatly upset him. So he thought, to do logic you need names of things, and this forced him to say, well, actually, you know, things don't change very much, and that's what enables language. Change is slow, and kind of it's a little bit of sleight of hand there on Aristotle's part, I think. I mean, obviously later he talked about dynamics, you know, and about potential and so forth, and did try to give an account of change more generally. Strangely, in Buddhist logic, in the logic of Chandrakirti and Dharmakirti, very ancient Buddhist logic, they weren't perturbed by the flux of everything, and managed to still work out a syllogistic logic that took full cognizance of panterae, and they had to do this by introducing like the infinitesimal unit of time, the moment. So that they actually didn't have that kind of moment of panic that Aristotle had around things. Whether they pulled it off or not, I don't know. I mean, I'd need to revisit that and put ice on my head and probably get nowhere anyway. Right, I'm going to go down these steps now onto the towpath. Surely I wonder if I should do this. Well, there's some ice on the canal, which is melting. Panterae, the ice is melting. So, everything is connected. Well, that's okay. I think that is okay. But let's think of things as clusters themselves of connections. And I think, and the connection. What is a connection? Well, of course, in the modern world, a connection is when you've got Wi-Fi, sitting in the cafe, and you take out your iPad and it says, do you want to connect to the Wi-Fi? You know, do you want a connection? You want a connection into the great swirl of information, which is the huge part of the modern world. Well, okay, your iPad's a thing, but of course if you lift the lid off your iPad, you find that there are, inside it contains more things which are connected. And of course if you take the lid off the central processing unit, it's got like 2 billion transistors, which are things connected and working together in the CPU, or in the memory and all the rest of it, and the power supply and the battery and da da da, and the screen. And this thing is really itself, its existence, inverted commas, depends upon all the connectivity under the hood, as it were. And you can see where Dirk Gently's coming from now, and you say, well, everything is connected. Well, things themselves are bundles of connections. And connections are the wherewithal for information, to do what information does, which is to travel and interact with other information. And this is what connectivity is, you know. You know, the Earth's connected to the Moon through the gravitational field. And that whole kind of process is informational. The gravitational constant, the distance from the Moon, which are all quantifiable as information. These are the things that determine the position of the Moon on any particular day. And so, for instance, the state of the tides, which depends upon the gravitational pull of the Moon, which is an informational connection between the Moon and the sea, which is determined and makes the movement of the sea in what we call tides fairly predictable. And on the basis of Newton's inverse square law, you know, knowing the mass of the Earth, the mass of the Moon, the distance and the distance between the Earth and the Moon and so on, all of this is a matter of information that's at the core of the connectedness. Now it's this that Dirk Gently is picking up, particularly as a holistic detective wanting to solve a case. Of course, he needs to gather information about the case. But of course, everything is connected. That means that the information is there everywhere. Now, obviously, sometimes less obvious than at other times. Now, the interesting thing here in the Dirk Gently scenario, as fictional and fantastic as it is, of course, is that in interrogating reality with your puzzle, with your conundrum, in Dirk Gently's method is to open oneself to it. It's to allow it to speak to you. By not being too fierce in your direction, which produces, I mean, that is an approach which produces its own kind of blindness, causes us to overlook things. And sometimes it's by noticing the odd and the peripheral and the anomalous that we get a sudden clue to whatever it is that's bugging us. So, and I think all this is a kind of a recommendation, perhaps, that if you want to understand something, look far and wide. Allow yourself, at least some of the time, to be unsystematic and to be sort of dreamily open to promptings from inside yourself and around yourself, and to be open to synchronicity and serendipity and so on. I think this is like Dirk Gently's conceit, and Douglas Adams, who came up with the original concept, you know, just worked that up, you know, so what happens if you carry on like that? And it's very funny, you know, the result, but at the same time you realise that there's something in it. So, chaps, when you're investigating the latest political disaster, cast your net wide. Look at the people. Look at the history. Look at the prognostications. Make prognostications of your own. Look at the connections. Look at the institutions. Look at it in terms of economics, you know, exchange of value and where it all. Look at it from the point of view of paradynamics. Look at it from the point of view of culture. Because yeah, pretty, you know, human activities are embedded in particular cultures, and cultures kind of get embedded in each other as well. So whether you think about Donald Trump, or commodification of yoga, or dissent in China, Brexit. Class relations in 19th century Saxony. Whatever's your bag, take Gently's advice, you know, or Gently's prompting there, you know, everything's connected. But realise that things themselves are bundles of connections. And that connection means information. Okay, it's a bit of a squib today, that. I'm kind of digging around some old furrows there. It strikes me as fairly difficult not to engage with things, objects, if you're going to do philosophy. And fairly difficult not to encounter a push and a pull between metaphysics of flux and metaphysics of stasis. Bear in mind there that I do know what I've said, you know, that there isn't really a metaphysics of flux. It's almost like metaphysics per se introduces stasis and things and objects and billiard balls and unchangeable atoms and so forth, and unchangeable higher realities. That's what metaphysics is really, you know, it's an attempt to characterise the being of all beings and the being of being. You know, it falls at the first hurdle that there is no perspective available to us outside of everything. We can attempt to construct one imaginatively. Whether you do that by deduction or science or fantasy is, again, you know, it's a difficult question. Anyway, I think I'll leave you with it. It's getting easy to the noisy bridge just up there. Well, thanks for listening. Remember to bung us a couple of dollars on the sponsorship. So with that outrageous instance of begging, I shall say over and out.